Hello, this is Leon Daniels, and I'm really delighted to have a very special guest at Lunch with Leon today. We've travelled to India to meet my great friend, Babish Agarwal, who is the co-founder of Ola Cabs. Babish got the idea when he had a bad taxi experience in 2011 in India, a driver demanding more money mid-journey and eventually having to leave them. And he resolved to do something better. So after early success in India, Ola Cabs has expanded into Australia, New Zealand, and now it's in London. Last year, the company was valued at $6.5 billion, and Babish is one of the most successful young entrepreneurs in the world. As always, it was exciting and enlightening to catch up with him. So, Babish, you've become a great icon for young entrepreneurs, and you started out, made great success. All my listeners want to know, what gave you the idea of Ola Cabs in the first place?
Leon, wonderful to be on this podcast with you. Looking forward to our chat ahead. I personally believe there's still a lot of journey to cover for myself and my company. Just to give a quick background, we started Ola in 2010, end of 2010. So it's been 10 years. I was a young 24-year-old kid back then. When we started off, we didn't really narrow down on this perfect or this kind of a business model right from the start, but we always started off having a pulse of the Indian consumer and the Indian context, and in mobility for those of your listeners who have been to India, India is a chaotic country. Car ownership is actually very low, for a country of 1.3 billion people, only about 35 million own cars. So that's less than 3%. And public transport penetration is also very low in India. India would have, let's say, the one-tenth the number of buses per capita that a city like London would have. So with a growing middle class, with growing youth, the need to get around cities for a livelihood is just as high as anywhere else. So therein, we saw the opportunity to do something, and then we iterated a few times to figure out the right proposition and the right business model for the Indian market. So that's how we started, Leon. It's been 10 long years, but since then, it's been a very exciting journey. Now we operate across about 200 cities in India, and we operate all kinds of mobility services, cars, auto rickshaws, or tuk-tuks. Many, many countries call them tuk-tuks. Bike taxis, public transport. And we do this not just in India, but also in the UK and in Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, and I was wondering, is the whole makeup different in the different territories? So there's different sorts of services, different age profile of users. Is it different in every city where you operate?
Yes, I mean, there are themes, I would say. Not every city is very different, but if you think of India as one homogeneous country, it's absolutely not. So India is a very complex, multicultural, multidimensional country. And each state would actually be thought of almost like a country in itself in terms of its cultural differentiation. So, the big towns in India are very different from the tier two towns, from the tier three towns. And that's just our India business. And then when we look internationally, a London is very different from, let's say, a Hull and even Auckland or Sydney. So there are a lot of differences, but there's a core similarity, which is the need for urban commute has evolved from you buying your own product, which used to be a car, to you mixing it up with some services and some products. So many families will still own a car, but some people in the family might still rely on some kind of a mobility service to get around. So that's the core technology disruption, which has happened in the last decade or so across the world. And that is similar. But what people do when you give them a mobility service on demand is very different. In a small town in India, a lot of people might just end up just visiting each other. In a big city like London, there's so much more entertainment, so much more business, so much more commerce. Right. So the end users are very different.
I had Professor David Begg on the show, and he said we were in danger of becoming mobility junkies. That this urge to travel was with us.
you know, whether it's by air to go and see other people, other places, whether it's to go out in the evening for restaurants and bars. And he said the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, has reset that a bit, because we've learned that we don't have to. He nearly said that we were confusing travel for productivity, because if we did a lot of traveling, therefore we must be working very hard, therefore we must be very productive. And the virus has taught us that we can be quite productive at home. So why is it you think people have got this great need to travel, this whole mobility thing?
You know, Leon, actually, that's a very deep question. And that's a very, very interesting observation, which you shared. And many of us are actually reflecting amongst ourselves that with the pandemic, we're all realizing that we are more productive over digital means. But I think, you know, the human urge to travel is deeper than that. It's deeper than just the urge for productivity. You know, the human urge to travel is, you know, in some sense, a search for meaning, a search for belonging, a search for economic freedom, economic opportunity, right? And that could, I don't think those basic human instincts and needs are going away. You know, if I actually step back and paint a history of mobility, so to say, right? Like starting from the invention of the steam engine in the UK. So, you know, if you think of the steam engine, the biggest innovation built on top of that was the locomotive, the steam locomotive and the steamship. And, you know, that led to such a disruptive change in trade in those times and in terms of geopolitical power in those times, right? And the travel meant the fact that you could transport goods faster, the fact that you could move people faster meant a complete overhaul of society back, you know, in 2-3 centuries ago. Since then, if you think of the invention of the internal combustion engine, which led to the invention of the car, because now you could have energy harnessed in a smaller form factor inside a car. That led to modern cities being built, modern suburbs being built, right? Then if you think ahead into the innovation of the jet engine and, you know, the impact that had on air travel, I actually believe the technology advancements of in the mobility and transportation domain push society in a certain direction, because the human need to travel is something very, very deep within us. I don't think that's going away, be it for spiritual freedom, or be it for economic opportunity, or be it for, you know, meeting loved ones or hanging out with loved ones. You know, the pandemic might have a small term blip on it, but we are humans at the end.
You're right. And firstly, you can't go on vacation on Zoom. and we do, don't we? I mean, I don't know about you. I'm bursting to be able to travel again properly. I've done one or two trips to Europe, but nothing of any distance yet. And I feel like a whole year of my life has been taken away, because I would normally have traveled, met friends and colleagues and people around the world. So I'm bursting to do it. And I can't wait for us to be in a position to do so. But I think you're absolutely right. Deep down inside us, no matter what the obstacles are, we've got this passionate desire, have we not, to come together as humans. And frankly, I mean, we can get some visual clues over Zoom, but that's not like the warmth that you get with you know, about how you trust people, how they behave, and so on, I think is so important. And I've got a bit of a theory that the mass public transport market is probably irrevocably damaged, because there will be some of that market that's gone for good. And personal mobility will pick up some of that slack, won't it? People, I think, will want safer and more independent travel, at least in the short to medium term, whilst we learn to live with all of this. Is that your view too?
Actually, Leon, my view is a little more radical than that. I agree with your view. You know, whatever you said on the public transport, you know, having already reached its peak, and you know, personal transport taking over, I agree with that. But I actually believe, you know, the pandemic will force an acceleration in innovation in mobility, which, you know, sitting today, we cannot really envision what it will be like 10 years out, 20 years out. And actually, if you look at the broader theme, I actually believe we are in, you know, a 2-3 decade innovation cycle in the mobility technology space, or the transportation technology space, with shared mobility, electric mobility, autonomous, flying cars, you know, first mile, last mile solutions. There's so much that has happened in the last 10 years, which had not happened in the last 50, 60 years. Right. And I think the pandemic will accelerate that that innovation curve. Right. So countries and cities which enable more innovation in their mobility ecosystems will actually stand to have a massive productivity enhancement and a massive lifestyle improvement for their citizens. Right. And I think this point also, my view, Coral, you know, also adds to the point we just discussed before around the pandemic slowing down mobility. I actually feel it'll accelerate a lot of innovations, which, you know, entrepreneurs will build around the world. And then today there's entrepreneurship in many, many parts of the world, not just in one corner of one country. So it's very exciting times, and public transport might have hit its peak. Personal transport might not be the long-term solution. There might be solutions which we can't envision right now. Maybe some kind of people are working around on under road tunnels, flying cars, fixed route flying cars. Who knows what the future holds here? But I'm personally very excited and enthused by the next 10 years of innovation that we'll see.
Well, and you've heard me say this before, I'm really excited about the future. I sometimes think that's because I've got less of it to look forward to than you have. So it's very important to stay focused, I think, on the future. And I was going to ask you about the typical users for Ola cabs. Mm-hmm. My guess would be it's at the younger end of the market where people are more adept with digital technology and so on. But am I right about that? What's your age and demographics like for Ola cab users?
Yeah. So our users, the rideshare users, do tend to be a little bit more younger. They tend to be more professional. People who work in corporate settings definitely use ride-sharing services more, going in and coming out of their offices every day. There's obviously a lot of use cases around nightlife in any city, be it London or be it Bombay. And nightlife is a big use case. But increasingly, the penetration of ride-sharing solutions is going much deeper than just the early adopters, which was the younger lot. You know, people, as companies like ourselves and the other ride-sharing companies, as we are building better access technologies, be it a phone call to book, be it payment in cash, or be it other ways, right? The access to this this way of moving around or this mobility service is increasing. And there is definitely a need for, like, for example, in India, the need to increase access correlates with language of access. India, English is only a portion of the country. A lot of people speak not just one language, but maybe 25 languages. So as we are going deeper into localizing in multiple languages, more and more people and also more and more older folk are coming in, and more non-typical office users, people who might have their own small businesses in small cities, they are coming into the service. Same in our Western markets also. As we go deeper into the country, as we launch more kinds of services for consumers, people find that they would also like to use this experience. Because in the end, the technology of ordering a vehicle with one click is something everybody would want, right?
And I was going to ask you, one of the things that is a feature, for example, when I was at First Group, the coach services between, for example, New York and Boston, there are over 20 coach lines. And there's a Chinese one, and an Indian one, and a Jewish one, and a Catholic one. And so people can choose to travel with people that they might feel more affinity to sharing with for any reason. So that got me thinking. So could a development be that within the app, I can express some preferences over who I might want to ride share with? Because, for example, I might want to, firstly, if I want, I could just take anybody. But is there a possibility in the future I'll be able to say that I want somebody who's got a different view to me, so we can have a good conversation during the journey, or somebody who agrees with me, I don't know, about sport or religion or politics. And I realize that if we fast forward to that, there's no point in me asking for somebody young and beautiful, because they certainly won't be choosing to choose me. But I could, couldn't I, arguably have an infinite choice of rideshare partner if I was prepared to trade off my preferred traveling partner with the speed of my service. Is that reasonable?
Leon, if you're mixing the social networks with ride sharing, I think it's a volatile, very, very volatile mix. Because each of these industries have their own, dynamics with how society themselves is evolving, right? And, you know, these dynamics vary in Europe to the US to India to China, right? So, for my business, I would not be mixing the social networks with ride-sharing for a while.
Well, look, I've only ever had good ride-sharing experiences. In many cases, I've opted to ride-share and there hasn't been anybody else wanting to make the journey, so I just got a better deal. But many of the people I have ride-shared with have been the sort of people I might never have met, and it was a great experience. I'm guessing that, certainly in the Western culture, we are, believe it or not, a bit shy and reticent. And that shyness probably causes us to want to make a sole, one-only user ride as opposed to the potluck of sharing. But I guess in some communities and some parts of the world, that sharing is quite normal, is it?
Yeah, actually, you're absolutely right, Leon. I think it totally depends on the culture of whichever part of the world we're talking about, right? But I do feel as the industry evolves and matures and as citizens and society accepts this business model as a part of life for the next multiple decades, right? There will be choices, preferences available, and the services will also become more and more segmented for you as a consumer and as a citizen. You know, some people might want to ride with a certain type of, rideshare driver or partner. And you as a rideshare offerer might want to have people going in a certain direction or people, lot of that depends on how, which culture we're talking about and what is the context of ride sharing in that culture, right? The line to be balanced is obviously ride sharing in the end is still a public good, right? It's a public a service offered to everybody. Obviously it's priced for and in a market way. But it's a public service offered to everybody. So the lines to draw where how much private and personalization would be offered and how much standardization needs to be offered is actually a conversation between society, companies, and policy.
So, Bhavish, one of the things that impressed me about Ola was all the steps that you go to make sure for the security of the passengers and so on. So all the checking and all the procedures that you have, because the market gets a little bit of a bad press in some places some of the time. And whilst we're talking, as you know, the Uber appeal against the loss of its license in London is shortly to come to court. So what else sets Ola Cabs apart from its competitors? Why would people choose Ola Cabs if it had a choice?
That's a good question, Leon. See, Ola is a fairly different company than some of our competitors, and I'll elaborate how. Firstly, our approach to business is very collaborative with the regulators because transportation and mobility is a very core policy aspect for city, mayors and governors and all of that across the world. And we always try and ensure we build into their policy priorities. For example, in London, there's been a big push for electrification. And we've tried to do our bit, and we continue to try and do our bit as we think of the future of electrification from a London market standpoint. So it's very important for us that we collaborate with the regulators across the world. And even if we have to make some changes to our business model, we are very open to doing that. That's number one. Number two, for consumers, we actually reflect a more broader choice and platform than just a unidimensional rideshare service. For example, in India, we think of, actually around the world, we think of ourselves as a mobility services platform, not a rideshare service. So in India, where our platform is the most developed, we have everything from cars to auto rickshaws to bike taxis to public transport, everything on the same platform. And slowly we're taking all of these concepts into other markets with its own local nuances. Thirdly, we also, one of the key stakeholders in this is actually the driver partner, right? So this industry needs to work for the driver partner, and he needs to ensure he is making a better deal out of it and, having the right kind of a work environment for his own, preference. So these are three important areas where our rideshare service, I believe, differs or at least focuses more strongly on versus some of our competitors. Another dimension of Ola, which people don't know yet, but will know soon, is we're also actually an electric mobility company. So we have our own electric vehicles. Soon we will be launching them across Europe, including the UK. And these would be electric two-wheelers, like motorcycles and mopeds and those vehicles. And eventually in the near future, some other vehicle formats also. So we actually bring together the whole ecosystem of software and services and hardware into one business model and one proposition for the consumer.
So, yeah, I saw that you'd made some big steps in the electric vehicle side. So yes. Here on this podcast, we've already had two or three goes at the debate of electric versus hydrogen. Uh-huh. So have you got a view about whether electric is going to succeed? Because this is potentially the VHS and Betamax argument. So is all your money on battery electric?
Actually, you know, I don't think either, because mobility is such a vast domain. There are different form factors. So my view is, depending on the form factor, the fuel preference will change. I actually think even long term, there'll be some gasoline always existing for some form factors. And there will be a lot of form factors which will become electrified. And, you know, hydrogen, that particular fuel still needs to get the infrastructure sorted out, which will happen, you know, because the companies are investing big into that. But once that gets sorted out, that fuel will be very relevant for larger form factor vehicles, buses and commercial trucks and large form factor passenger vehicles. But if you think of smaller vehicles, you know, I actually still don't see how hydrogen will be the most relevant fuel for that segment. So I think it'll be a little bit vehicle segments choosing the fuel.
I'm just going to move us away from that. One of the things I am passionate about is getting young people into transport as a career. Many of the transport companies are run by white-haired old men like me. So I've always been really keen to make sure that we get women into responsible positions, people from different ethnic backgrounds and so on. That's very much the demographics of our users. So as a hugely successful businessman now, what's your advice to people who are thinking about joining transport for a career, and especially for those people who might think they're excluded from it by gender or by upbringing?
Actually, Leon, that's a very interesting question. I have actually never thought of it from that standpoint, but now that you mention, it's very true. You know, transportation used to be thought of as a very staid profession or occupation, right? But, you know, I think that's changing, Leon. Over the last decade, there has been so much innovation. And a lot of times, you know, to bring the youth in, to make a sector or an industry exciting and aspirational, it has to have a lot of innovation. And the exciting thing is mobility as a holistic industry is, I would believe, it's the most exciting industry today. The kind of technology innovations happening in propulsion, in formats itself, potentially flying cars, drones, autonomous vehicles. There's a lot of work happening in making infrastructure smarter to work with smarter vehicles. Computing is becoming a much more predominant part of the vehicle product itself. So if you think of all these exciting things, I actually see a lot more youth, engineering talent, technology talent, policy talent, wanting to get into this sphere of mobility. And you know, to accelerate it even more, I think companies like myself, like our company, other companies, you know, very forward-looking regulators like in London, etc., can actually bring the whole ecosystem together to excite the population and the key target groups.
And what about those people like you who want to do what you've done, which is to raise some money and put their business idea into practice and become an entrepreneur? So I'm really interested, what would you say if we had budding entrepreneurs in our audience? What's your advice for young entrepreneurs?
Leon, I think the world needs more entrepreneurs. And the world, as we see it, has been built by enterprising people, you know, of all walks of life, be it in government or policy or a business, and the world needs more entrepreneurs, right? In the Western world, in the Asian world, everywhere. And there is no better time than now when there is disruption all around us, where you can actually get on with your idea. Once they get on, if they have an open mind to feedback that they receive from the market, from their friends, from their well-wishers or from customers, they can iterate faster. But there is no better time than now. And my advice to anybody who would be considering the option of, should I start up, should I take a job, or should I continue in my job? I think if you have fire, just give it a shot. And even if you don't succeed, you'll be wiser for the experience. Right?
That's very true. So other entrepreneurs that you yourself admire? I mean, lots of people admire you, but who are the sorts of, who are the people that you admire out there in the world who've succeeded?
Actually, I have a lot of people I admire in the Indian context and in the Western context. I mean, if you think of somebody in the current context, I mean, you have to admire what Elon Musk is doing with his ventures, truly visionary, long-term thinking. I admire, people from the Indian business world like Ratan Tata, who's very well-known in the UK business world also. Him and his group has built the Indian business world like none other. Growing up, a lot of my inspirations also came from somebody from the likes of Steve Jobs, who also was a visionary, set a direction for multiple industries, right? So these are people I would admire, and they are definitely giants in their industries. So hopefully I can follow in my own little way.
Well, look, and that sort of advice to young people is so important, because people, there's lots of concern about what the future might hold. Certainly there are going to be fewer conventional career type jobs. And I agree with you entirely. What we need is more enterprise, because the only way we're going to dig ourselves out of the economic difficulties that clearly we're all having in one form or another has got to be by more enterprise. And I'm super excited about that. And I think the future is going to be really very good for these people. And I think this is probably the most fertile time, isn't it, for the sorts of funding? Because if I'm not mistaken, there's quite a bit of money floating around looking for investment homes. And I'm not suggesting it's easy, but there is money looking for some good investment, isn't there?
Absolutely, Leon. The interesting times that we live in is that there is a lot of opportunity to solve problems, and there is a lot of capital available if you have a good idea and if you're willing to commit to it. So, it doesn't mean that it's easy, like you mentioned, but there is availability of capital. The capital networks are getting more accessible in general. The startup communities across the UK, India, are getting much more accessible. So this is the best time to start up. And if you have a good idea and if you're committed to it, and if you keep a good pulse of your consumer and your customer, I think in the end you will make it.
Well, Bhavish, it's been fabulous to have you for lunch. I'm sorry we're not able to have a real lunch together, but I know we'll fix that as soon as it's possible for either of us to travel anywhere. So I'm really looking forward to that. I do know that people will be so interested to hear what you've got to say about entrepreneurial ability and the exciting thing about the future. And it is a really exciting time for young people. We have got the time now for people who've maybe not thought. I previously said to you, I did the Women in Rail conference in Kuala Lumpur, and there were three or four rows of Muslim women, young women, just graduates, wearing the full burqa, asking how they get into civil engineering, highway engineering, railway engineering. This is so wonderful that those are people who might thought that area of business was closed to them, now want to get into those sorts of businesses. So I'm excited about that. So Bhavish, it's been wonderful to have you on my podcast. I'm thrilled that you found the time in India to come and have lunch with me. As I say, I look forward to seeing you when we are together. This has been an ITTHub.net production. It's Lunch with Leon. We're here every week, hopefully with exciting people and exciting stories from around the world. A big thank you to my guest, once again, Bhavish Agrawal from Ola Cabs. Wish you great business success, Bhavish, in all of your markets, and very much look forward to ride sharing with you sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Leon. Wonderful to be on the show with you.